Jai Ma. So we have this chapter 13th from Essays on the Gita, the Lord of the Sacrifice. So we see so many chapters Sri Aurobindo devotes to sacrifice, because it is not just one of the, but the central concept of the Gita, the central idea. In terms of practice, it is the thing which the Gita asks us to engage in. So as we know, what is sacrifice? Sacrifice is some kind of a giving. Just better. So sacrifice is giving, and it is the law which governs this world. We don't want to acknowledge it. We don't want it because it's hurtful to the ego self. Why should I sacrifice? People often nowadays we hear, why should I sacrifice? So Sri Aurobindo says sacrifice will be extracted from you. It's like a tax. So, because you see, taxation system, it almost draws from that. In an ideal governance, you have something you give, and then ultimately it goes for everybody, everybody's development. So sacrifice is the law which operates in nature, and its tangible form is that we cannot live, even breathe, or you know, live a day without receiving something from the world and without giving something to the world. It's just impossible. The very air we breathe, we release some carbon dioxide, and how much ever toxic it may be for us, but it goes into feeding the plants. So this is the law of sacrifice. Everything, everywhere, because of the law of sacrifice, everything is interconnected. So it's most crudest form is giving something external, and its tangible form is, as I said, the give and take which is going on in this world. But give and take may be okay as a policy as far as human life is concerned, but it's not the highest policy and certainly not yogic. So there are three stages that the mother describes, Sri Aurobindo describes even in the Gita. So first is when we give sacrifice not to the highest, but to the highest as he is revealed in this mutable changing world. So here he is revealed as everything. Food is one thing that we need. Rain is another thing that we need. We need clothing, we need shelter, and all kinds of things. We need intelligence, we need feelings. So for each of these there is a Godhead. So if you look at the Vedic pantheon of gods, it is each activity, each movement has a particular God. So even for the nervous system, you'll have a Godhead who takes care of the nervous system. And very logical, because the moment we say there is a supreme being, so every aspect of the supreme also shares something of that being. So all existences, all beings, each of them govern something or the other in us. So when we give to them and we receive from them whatever they can give. So this was the way of the gods, that we give and we receive. When we forget to give, but only want, 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 then that's not what sacrifice is about. And I'll just share a small little story. Somebody was mentioning to me about all that he, you know, his life has changed after turning to mother, and it changed this way and that way. So at some point I just felt inspired and asked him, what have you given to the mother? So it's, you know, we are still with the atmosphere of darshan messages. At one point, some people wanted to sit in Sri Aurobindo's room. And the mother asked that, what has he done to deserve to sit in Sri Aurobindo's room? So the disciple was quite shaken. So he asked, what should one do? What can one do to Sri Aurobindo? He said, it means you have given something of yourself. It could be work, it could be money, it could be some energy. Something you should have given to Sri Aurobindo. It's not that Sri Aurobindo needs it, nor the mother needs it. But this is what the law of sacrifice is, that when we give something of our consciousness to the divine, some activity, some energy, then that spot which is sort of emptied receives the influx of the divine. Otherwise, we are so full of ourselves that Of course, the divine continues to give, but we don't have space to receive. So the law of sacrifice begins when we begin to recognize this, and in its inferior mode is giving to the divine for small gains, for fulfillment of desires. Now many people form this relation also with the Divine Mother. So there used to be a whole movement where people would say that, you know, offer this flower and the mother will give you this. Offer that flower and the mother will give you that. So someone was once asking that, is it correct? I said, it's not about correct or right or wrong. It's the kind of relation you want to form. So of course she can give you all these things, and who knows, she will give you if you put this flower because you have the faith. That's not important. The important thing is, this is not the highest relation we can form with her. And this we understand from the Gita. So this is what is known as the divine in the mutable becomings, the Sharo Bhav. Even in this world of ever-changing appearances, still the divine is there. That's why whatever we are giving with this intent or that intent ultimately goes back to the source, because there is this connectedness. But if we do that, if we live only by the law of desires and we give, we remain tied to the cycle of ignorance. And the first step of yoga is to get free from this veil of ignorance, this covering of ignorance. By ignorance is meant that obscurity because of which we don't know who we are. Of course, we have read that there is a soul within. But at the sight of so-called physical death, we start shaking. So the person who has realized the soul is never afraid of death, because he knows death doesn't exist. So we can form that kind of relation, divine except, because he is also in the mutable becomings. But a higher relation, as we have discovered, is that beyond all these mutable becomings is the immutable, impersonal Brahman. Meaning thereby, now whatever giving is there from us to the divine is not for any earthly object, but for freedom, from release from ignorance. There's some very beautiful bhajan the other day I was remembering it. Bhajan from Sri Ramakrishna Ashram, which Swami Vivekananda has sung. So he speaks of the mother as Bhai Bhanjana, Bhava Bhanjana, you break my bonds. See, when we read Sri Aurobindo's Vedic prayer, where he speaks of, be wide in me, O Varuna, be full in me, lead me from mansion to mansion, O death. And at the end he says, let me not be subject to these gods, O Kali. This freedom, this liberation from ignorance. Why liberation? Because in ignorance we receive a mixed baggage of pleasure and pain. And freedom from ignorance gives us the access code to divine peace and delight. We don't normally value it. So life pushes us to value it. With every pleasure is tagged one pain in the beginning, kindergarten. As we grow up in consciousness, two pain we bring with every pleasure. When we are very developed, then five pains with every pleasure. So nature is pushing us. A time comes when man says, well, I want something else than this fulfillment of desires. And that's when the second level of sacrifice begins, where the giving is not for any earthly good, but for the highest good as has been conceived by man, which is freedom from ignorance. But the problem with that is that if you take only these two aspects of the divine, divine in the becoming and the divine as the immutable presence, then where this becoming has come from, generally those who believe in this, they end up believing that all action, all work in the world, this world itself ultimately is an illusion. It was only meant to give you pain so that you are pushed and discover the divine within, who is beyond all this. But then Sri Aurobindo says there is a third level, and that's where he brings in the Purushottama, the Lord of the sacrifice. So there is the sacrifice taking place in the mutable world of ever-changing appearances, various desires, and there is the immutable Brahman which is behind it all, and beyond it is the Purushottama. And the analogy, because it's the same truth which is revealed in several ways, is if we image the sun, the earth, and the no gravity zone in between. So the earth is this mutable becoming, which is also conducted by the sun. But here everything is separate. I want this, I want that. Then if we have to go to the sun, supposing, we have to first enter the zero gravity zone where we are completely freed from the pull of earth and its gravitation. That's nirvana. But is that the end? No. We must go in, what is that, yan, aditya, to the actual aditya, that is the sun. So this is the three stages of the journey. So when we, why Purushottama? Because then all beings are derived from his being. So all the gods then we discover are aspects of the one. They are not suddenly we make, they become meaningless. No, they are aspects of the one. At his command they are operating in this creation. What about the impersonal Brahman? That is what we have to cross to find him. If we have desires, we cannot attain to the highest. This is the basic law. So that's why first knowledge, then works. What does knowledge do? By the path of knowledge, we turn away from this world of appearances. We don't engage with the surface activities. We turn within, or we engage with them just to a bare minimum, so that at least we are a seeker after knowledge has to be like that. He has to seek solitude. He has to be more engaged in turned within and turned upward in an inward concentration and upward concentration. So this is the path which has been taught to us. And the problem with this path was then people said, oh, that means at some point I have to abandon the works. So why not now? So the Gita says, no, don't do, you can't do it prematurely. So those who know, they don't disturb others. This is the logic. The logic is they who are free, they continue to engage in worldly action, but of a basic minimum kind. Why? Because lest the others who are still to remain engaged, they are not misguided. Because if they see that a person is disengaged from the world, they may start following that ideal and they are not ready really for release into the immutable Brahman. They will continue to be attached to the world of desire. So what they will do is they will repress, they will suppress, it will come out in various ways. That's why people originally in monasteries, they were not admitted just like that. They had to be really adhikari. But Sri Aurobindo says this too is not the final truth. The final truth is that in this world also, it is the divine who is there in this world as the mutable, but is the divine because of which this world has come into being. So that's where he brings in the ideal of karma yoga. That by karma yoga, while being in the world, the example is given of a lotus leaf which is floating in water. So while being in the world, you will continue to dwell in the consciousness of the Supreme. But you have to go through this stage. If there is desire, we cannot. So there is the desired self. Here also divine will be operative, but he will operate through the desire operating system, DOS, original DOS. Then you have the impersonal Brahman. First step is to be freed. There is no other way. We cannot just suddenly remain in desires and imagine or expect that the transformation will take place. The highest grace cannot act because such is the law. But once we are freed from desire, once we have discovered that inner peace, Sashvatim, Santim, Netaresham, once we have discovered the inner joy, because the more we get freed from desire, the more wideness and freedom and joy we begin to experience. We begin to discover that all our suffering and struggle were because we were acting under the impulsion of desire. Because what happens with desire? If I get this, I'll be happy. Okay, I got it. See, the unhappiness will start chasing as a shadow. You buy the most expensive dress in the world or somebody gives you. Now the problem is whether people are appreciating it or not. How will you preserve it? How long it is going to last? Every day you'll wonder which one to wear. If there is a stain, you will suffer. So with every object of desire that we get, tagged along with it, all these accompaniments. So the moment desire goes, it's freedom. You expect nothing from anyone, from this world, from anything. And then you become nothing but a free emptiness which through which the divine pours. Now this divine pours is not there in other traditions. You are free inside. That's the end of the story. But in our yoga, the Jivan Mukta becomes a vessel, a channel, a vehicle, an instrument for the divine to pour his action upon the world. So this is what we see in the Lord of the Sacrifice. This distinction is important because with Sri Aurobindo and the mother also, we can form either the relation of the lesser kind, they will respond. Because it's the same thing with Sri Krishna, that we can forge with him a relation of the lesser kind. But to forge the relation of the highest kind, we have to be freed from the law of desire. And how to do it, that also explains. First step is where we are only wanting for ourselves and we are not wanting to give to anyone. Extreme degree of selfishness means extreme degree of suffering also. People who are selfish, they suffer a lot. Why? Because they are always expecting. Even if somebody gives them so much, yet the day they don't receive something, they will curse you. Because they take everything they are getting it for granted. So they suffer a lot actually. That's extreme degree of selfishness. So they don't believe in sacrifice, but you are not the doer of sacrifice. Nature is the doer of sacrifice. So what it does, it extracts from us. Just like the passing sun will pick up water wherever it must pick up. It will give rain wherever it must rain. So nature will extract sacrifice. You will be compelled to give. But because we are doing it unconsciously, not happily, so we suffer. Because when this happens, then we say, oh, God is so cruel. Why this happened? Why things are taken away from me? But the yogin realizes that it never was mine. To start with, it never was mine. So whatever I received from the divine when it's taken away. And it's very interesting. One doesn't have to be a yogi. A little bit of application of, I forget who was the tennis player who developed cancer and everybody said, you know, why you? He said, I never asked God when I became what I became. Now I should ask, why me? What a strange question is it? So basically even common sense will tell us, nothing really belongs to us. And we are not the doers, nature is the doer. And the day we realize these two things, nature will do it. So what we have to do? We have to let go, allow nature to do it. And if we don't do that, as we have read earlier, again in this chapter also Sri Aurobindo says, that well, we are like thief. Ordinarily we are living life like a thief. Because we get so much, we receive so much at every level. Intelligence we receive, the power of speaking we receive, but how we misuse everything. So we deviate from the law of sacrifice. And when we deviate from the law of sacrifice, suffering follows. This is the law. So he says the final, the uttamam rahasyam is the Purushottama. And highest revelation of sacrifice he reveals here. So he says the highest revelation, and it will come in moments of flashes. It cannot be done by intellectually just conceiving it. Brahman is the giver. Brahman is the ladle. Brahman is the pouring of things from the ladle into the fire. Brahman is the fire. And Brahman is the one who receives the offering. So that's the highest revelation, that right from the impulsion to the end, all is mother. The beginning is the mother, the middle is the mother, the end is the mother. For example, people say personal effort and grace. It's not either or. When the more we get closer to the grace, we realize that personal effort itself was initiated and carried by the grace. Because that's the law, you can't escape that. So it will ensure that you do the effort. And it is the divine grace which makes us do the effort, and the divine grace that fulfills it. So this is the highest, but because people do not know it, so there are several traditions. So page 126, we see a very beautiful sentence, where sacrifice is not willingly given, nature exacts it by force. She satisfies the law of her living. Whom is nature? Sacrificing to the Lord. It's not giving to impersonal Brahman. That doesn't make sense. So those who talk only of impersonal Brahman, they create a divide between nature and the divine. It is giving to the divine. That's why we see that how nature operates. That's why today when we recognize the chaos theory or the butterfly effect, it's a recognition of this fact that nature acts in a totality. We think it's isolation, but that's our limited vision. It acts in totality. So it extracts. A mutual giving and receiving is the law of life, without which it cannot for one moment endure. And this fact is the stamp of the divine creative will on the world it has manifested in its being. The proof that with sacrifice as the eternal companion, the Lord of creatures has created all these existences. If we were really separate, nothing should be required. Each one should be sufficient into itself. But it's not true. So this is where the give and take is. The universal law of sacrifice is the sign that the world is of God and belongs to God, and that life is his dominion and house of worship, and not a field for the self-satisfaction of the independent ego, not the fulfillment of the ego. That is only a crude and obscure beginning. But the discovery of God, the worship and seeking of the divine and the infinite through a constantly enlarging sacrifice, culminating in a perfect self-giving founded on a perfect self-knowledge, is that to which the experience of life is at last intended to lead. So the first mistake that we make is assuming that life is meant for satisfaction of the ego. And the divine also. First we decide that everybody should be, keep me at the center. So in families, there is the head of the family, he wants everybody to run around him. Nowadays, see how it is happening. Children are saying, we don't care. People are made to realize that you are not the center. Then we want all life around to make me the center. Some people go to this extreme extent where even for nation, they say, no, why should we do? Government should do everything for us. Everything, I should be at the center. Then it comes God. God is of no use unless he does everything to satisfy my ego. This is an error. We can live by it. Nobody is going to punish us, but we'll punish ourselves because this is not true. That's why when it is said in the Upanishad, Satyameva Jayate Nanritam Satyena Pantha Vitato Devyana. What is that truth? This is the first truth. That life is not centered around the ego. Nanritam is when we think that life should be centered around the ego. God is there to satisfy my ego and my desire. When I do like that, then Satyameva Jayate Nanritam. It will not have the victory. Because victory belongs to the divine. And then the next line is, that Satyena Pantha Vitato Devyana. The gods have paved the path of ascension through this truth. What is this truth? God is the center and God is the circumference. Individual life, collective life. It applies to collective life. As I said, even in Auroville, if you don't keep mother at the center, there will be problem. You may try to have a bonhomie, harmony by debate, discussion. Mankind has tried it for millenniums. Ended up in great wars. People want to do it for another millennium, it's okay. No loss to the divine, loss to civilization and humanity. Divine is the center. That's why Matri Mandir is the center. It's not about worshipping or not worshipping. That's the point. That's not the point. But to live for fulfilling the divine will within us. And that's what is willing servitor of the divine. What else it is? So, this is the law. And if we don't follow this law, no harm to God, but it's a damage to us. So this is the first thing. And then, same page, down below. He can really take nothing except what she allows him to recover as his portion, what the divine powers within her yield to his desire. Don't we know? Often people say, I put in so much effort, but I didn't get it. Somebody else got it. There's a story about it, that there was a tantric who was doing great sadhana and he was in his last stages. And there was this woodcutter was suddenly, it started pouring, so he couldn't go. So he was on the tree and then suddenly he was curious, who is this tantric at night in the forest? So he laid a little you know, place to sit, and he sat there and started doing his Homa mantra to invoke Kali. Suddenly, there was a tiger who roared, and as he saw the tiger, he ran for his life. He couldn't complete the yajna. Just then, this fellow was curious. He said, "What is this?" Tiger ran after him. He was devoured. He said, "What is this? I am so mesmerized. Why did I get to witness this?" So he goes and sits there. And Ma Kali appears and says, "Ask whatever boon you want to ask." He said, "But I have done nothing." He says, "Everything else you had done except this one thing. And so this is the life when you have to get the fruit, the fulfillment of all that you had done." This is what karmic law is. It's an evolutionary law. It's not a law of reward and punishment. So everything that we are doing goes into the account of Divine Development Bank, DDB. It's private limited and universal limited. And it documents exactly. So that's why when people suffer a loss, those who are turned to the Divine, they say, "Don't worry. He is keeping the account." People used to tell me, "Oh, income tax saving, this, that." I said, "See, mother is keeping account, don't worry. What I need, she will provide. How she would leave everything there." He said, "God keeps my account." It means this, that he will take care. This doesn't mean we should be negligent or careless. It simply means that if something is not coming to me, don't worry. If you have done something, you have not received something, it has still gone into your account. And what our account? It's nature. It is documented that you allowed that effort to take place. And when you need it, or when the Divine decide that this is the time to give it, it will give it to you. That time you may be a chaiwala. It doesn't matter. You'll be suddenly catapulted to a prime minister. You also don't know why. This is how it operates. So he says that nature extracts and the divine power. The egoistic soul in a world of sacrifice is as if a thief or robber who takes what these power bring to him and has no mind to give in return. All intelligence, everything has been given by nature, if you want to put it, and behind nature, God. But if I want to use it for my devious purposes, to just amass my own set of wealth, nature has her own ways. Somebody in the family will be there to drain it away. Or I will have everything, but I won't be able to enjoy. Or I'll feel claustrophobic. Sometimes I feel people with Z security so unfortunate, they can't get down and enjoy a stroll on the beach without anybody noticing them. So many things. So it comes with a heavy price. Only when the individual being begins to perceive and acknowledge in his acts the value of the self in others, as well as the power and needs of his own ego, begins to perceive universal nature behind his own workings, and through the cosmic Godheads gets some glimpse of the One and the Infinite. So this is the next step. Next step is the sattvic phase. This doesn't free us from ignorance. But at least we begin to acknowledge others too have a right. I just can't have my way. Others too have a right. That we see today, by and large, societies are beginning to accept. But this is not the highest. This is not even freedom from ego and ignorance. But it's a better sattvic ego. So it's better than the completely. And this increases things like altruistic tendencies. But this is only a long intermediate stage. Sri Aurobindo qualifies it long. Why? Because when we enter into this cycle that others also have a right, I must share with everybody, we may well believe that I am doing something very great. That I am already practicing yoga. This is not yet yoga. This is only a good human being. Because still there is that give and take. It's the sattvic bond. Still not freedom from the knot of action. So, last sentence on page 127. The real self-knowledge and consequently the right way of works lies beyond. For the sacrifice done with knowledge is the highest sacrifice, and that alone brings a perfect working. That can only come when he perceives that the self in him and the self in others are one being, and this self is something higher than the ego, an infinite, an impersonal, a universal existence in whom all move and have their being. So this is so important, because normally we start believing that if I am unselfish or I am acting selflessly, then I am acting divinely. No. Some people go to the extent that they become martyrs. That doesn't lead us to divinity. It's like entering into a cycle where in the sattvic phase, we are just accepting beating from everyone because my ego is... No, not my ego, not other ego. There is something still greater behind all the egos. And that is the divine consciousness. And we have to live for that. Now, this leap is a very difficult leap. Because while it's okay for somebody understanding to understand that, well, not only for me, I should live for my parents, my family, my community, and does it for that. This is easier, something tangible. But no, I should live only for God. Obey only God impulsion. Even if me and my community, me is of course the ego self, and the community calls me names, it requires a tremendous courage and surrender. This is the dilemma of Arjuna. He says, okay, I won't be selfish. I'll give my kingdom to Duryodhan. Shri Krishna says, no. That's not my will. My will is to give the kingdom to you. You have a problem. That's why we see in one of the aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo where he says, what can I do if my lover took off his robe and crown and gave it to me to wear? If the divine gives the kingdom to you, how can you say no? Maybe the world will mock, maybe the world will laugh. But normal tendency is no, not me, others. Now this is sattvic, but this is still ignorance. So this is what he is trying to remind us. In other words, man's way to liberation and perfection lies through an increasing impersonality. And this we will see sometimes and we don't understand because impersonality to us seems indifferent. That's why the mother says that people who are living in ignorance, they sometimes find the divine love almost like cold indifference. Because the divine does not act according to our human standards. Divine will not say, oh, so nice to see you. But he will give something which you can't even imagine. So his ways are very different. Sri Aurobindo's one smile was enough. He would not say, oh, very good. I'm so happy to see you. So how are things in Kolkata? Tell me the weather there. No? So that increasing impersonality will also be the sign of a Gnostic person. And people won't understand because it looks like indifference. But this is the path. So page 129, the way to bring about this great transformation follows a double path. For there is the way of knowledge and there is the way of works. We have already spoken of that. Taken by itself, page 129, somewhere in the middle, this path would seem to lead to the complete renunciation of works, which is the way of knowledge. So knowledge means turn toward the eternal and the impersonal. But in reality, such an absolute renunciation, passivity and severance are impossible. Meaning thereby that any work will draw me outward. It will attach me to the law of desire. So slowly I'll give up everything except the bare minimum. And think only of Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Mudmate. Shivoham, Shivoham. So, he says, yes, it is one path of liberation, knowledge. But now he says, superior is the way of works. Because this path will lead me only to the impersonal Brahman. But there is beyond the Purushottama. And so, he says, Purush and Prakriti are twin principles of being which cannot be severed. And so long as we remain in nature, our workings in nature must continue, even though they may take a different form, or rather a different sense from those of the unenlightened soul. The real renunciation, for renunciation there must be, is not the fleeing from works, but the slaying of ego and desire. And the way is to abandon attachment to the fruit. So that we have already read. So every time ego, and it assumes 1,000 forms. It's like Hydra or the Rakt Bij in that Chandi part. You try to slay it, from every drop, 1,000 will spring. It will assume very nice marks. I am masks. I am instrument of mother. This is a big mask. I am somebody great. I deserve it. I have heard people say, I deserve it. So, and sometimes people even say, oh, well deserved. All this is ignorance. Who knows? So In fact, what is deserve? It's the divine playing with himself. The highest sense is the divine giving and the divine receiving. Even for human relationship, this great truth of Brahma, everybody remembers, no? From the Gita quotes, Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Havi, Brahma Gano. But how to apply it? Mother says about love. That what is love? She says, love is not sexual intercourse. Love is not emotional hunger. Love is a mighty vibration coming from the one and going to the one. The moment we understand that the divine within me loves the divine in you, problem is over. So this is the application. So there is the liberation of perfect impersonality, and then further toward the end, page 132. So this why it's important, in the self and then in me. So that was the last phrase, last time we had discussed. Our ego, our limiting personality, stand in the way of our recognizing the divine, who is in all and in whom all have their being. For subject to personality, we see only such fragmentary aspects of him as the finite appearances of things suffer us to see. So that's why we see that, you know, we go to Mother Sri Aurobindo, we also go to this God, we go to that God, and we have all the gods. But we have to see all gods in the Master and all the Master in all. That's how, that is the meaning of Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo Maheshwara, Gurur Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Guru Vai Namah. The day we do that, then life is wonderful. We don't have to run here, there, because that aspect, and which Sri Aurobindo we see, Shiva's aspect so mightily, taking the poison of the world. Krishna's aspect, so delightful. His writings when we read, carrying the march of civilization, Kurukshetra, the Second World War and the... So we'll see that aspect of Krishna, we'll see Shiva, we'll see Brahma creating a new creation, giving birth to a new creation. And we'll see all the other gods through whom we receive. So the day we see Durga, the protecting power, Kali, destroying evil, darkness. So all the gods, all the powers reside in that one divine. So this is where we have to reach. We have to arrive at him not through our lower personality, but through the high, infinite and impersonal part of a being. And that we find by becoming the self, one in all, in whose existence the whole world is comprised. So that's why the first step is to get free from desire in that wide impersonality. Then only that second step really, that second system gets activated. That is also DOS, but that is divine operating system. This is the desire operating system. In between is IOS, impersonality operating system, or BOS, Brahman operating system, which is no operating system. It just is there like a witness. And then there is the DOS, divine operating system. So then we get into that greater self. This infinite containing, not excluding all finite appearances, this impersonal admitting, not rejecting all individualities and personalities. This immobile, sustaining, pervading, containing, not standing apart from all the movement of nature is the clear mirror in which the divine will reveal his being. So then we begin to see him, because otherwise we reject this world, reject the fragment, reject individualities. But then we discover that he is in all. So each individual, each individuality, each fragment is something of his being, something of his totality. But neither, therefore it is to the impersonal that we have first to attain, through the cosmic deities, through the aspects of the finite alone, the perfect knowledge of God cannot be totally obtained. But neither is the silent immobility of the impersonal self conceived as shut into itself and divorced from all that it sustains, contains and pervades, the whole all-revealing, all-satisfying truth of the divine. To see that, we have to look through its silence to the Purushottama. And he, in his divine greatness, possesses both the Akshara and the Shara. So first Shiva, Pashupati, then Krishna, Golok, that the cowherd's man, because we have to go through that stage. He, Shiva's domain starts from graveyard. Destroy your ego, put that bhasma on your forehead, come to me. Whose bhasma shall I put? Your. Don't. If you are ready to die to the ego, you can come to me. You are liberated. Next step, transfer to Krishna. We can stay there. You have those transit passengers, no? One is they have come, they will go to immigration, say I want nirvana, and they are in. Shiva's stamp is there. So those who want to transit to a greater becoming, so they are, there is a transit board. Where are they going? Krishna. Now Krishna will say, okay. For a greater becoming. It's not that one is higher, another is lower. They are two sides of one truth. First liberation, then perfection. Krishna is always for perfection. That's why we see Lok Sangrahartha, all his teachings. This why in the Gita we see the ideal of Purushottama. So liberation is one part and then the Purushottama. To see that we have to look through its silence to the Purushottama. And he in his divine greatness possesses both the Akshar and the Shar. He is seated in the immobility, but he manifests himself in the movement and in all the action of cosmic nature. To him, even after liberation, the sacrifice of works in nature continues to be offered. So this is where we have to take a clip from Shankaracharya. First, Shivoham, Shivoham, Satchidanandoham, Name Panchadhatu, Name, all those, I am not this creature, I am not that creature. Namata Nabandhu. After that, Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam Modmati. Now Govindam is coming. After that, you have all about Divine Mother. This is the sequence. You can't escape it. So first liberation, then the manifestation. We can't jump from living a life of desire to expecting for the transformation to become supramental beings. This, that. So that's why the Gita comes. Of course, in this yoga, everything is done by the mother. But we must know where we have to go. The real goal of the yoga is then a living and self-completing union with the divine Purushottama and is not merely a self-extinguishing emergence in the impersonal being. To raise our whole existence to the divine being, to dwell in him, mayeva nivashishyasi, to be at one with him, unify our consciousness with his, to make our fragmentary nature a reflection of his perfect nature, to be inspired in our thought and sense wholly by the divine knowledge, to be moved in will and action utterly and faultlessly by the divine will, to lose desire in his love and delight is man's perfection. So mind must become divinely inspired thought. Heart must become mirror of divine love. Life must become mirror of divine power, transmitter of divine power, channel of divine power and delight. And eventually the body itself must become a transparent or a translucent lamp of the divine light and ananda. It is that which the Gita describes as the highest secret. It is the true goal and the last sense of human living and the highest step in a progressive sacrifice of works. For he remains to the end the master of works and the soul of sacrifice. So we can say, for our context, living in the mother, living for the mother, living by the mother, no more living for desire but living for the mother. Then by that we are upgraded to living in the mother. That's the next step. So first is living for the mother, not living for desires. So gradually we are taken up in her. So we are living in the mother. We are inwardly free. Jivan Mukta. Whatever we may be doing, we are living in her. So we are inwardly free from all the shocks. Things come and go, but we are inwardly free. Then living by the mother. Now she begins to act. Our thoughts are her thought, or her thoughts are our thoughts. She blesses the thoughts and feelings and will. And her will becomes our will. Her love becomes our feelings. Her force becomes her life. Her wisdom becomes our knowledge and thought. Then the complete manifestation takes place. Okay. Chema. In the mother, for the mother, in the mother, by the mother.